So one of the things that really irritates me in teams and organizations is like culture speak. Things like leadership cliches or phrases or core values that really aren't aligned with the day-to-day operations and the workings of the team and the organization. For example, the leader talks about how people matter, but their behavior, their focus, their emotional reactions scream results matter. Another one is the organization that spends a load of money on wrapping the walls of their locker rooms and their weight rooms in phrases like fearless or integrity or play like a champion or whatever is the cliche of the year, but they actually never like sit down with team members to come up with those beliefs and talk about what should go up on those walls and the stories behind, you know, those beliefs, those phrases, those mantras. And then they never even talk about what they mean to them and how they're going to live them out as a team. Another thing I see is, you know, groups get together and they decide on some core values and beliefs. They put them on a shirt, a sign, they plaster them onto their locker room walls, and then they just forget about them. They don't talk about them. They don't come up. They don't reflect on them. They don't dictate the day-to-day operations and behaviors of people within the team. Well, in today's episode, Erica Morari is going to talk about the important elements of bringing those values, those core beliefs to life. She's going to share how they do that in their work at Gaping Void, the work they do with so many different organizations. If you haven't already, she was in our last episode of the podcast as well. So be sure to check that one out before you kind of dive into today's episode. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm your host, JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Nate Sanderson. The mission of this podcast is to help you become a better leader and build a better culture. In addition to this podcast, I am the founder of TOC, which provides one-on-one coaching and consulting for leaders. Learn more about us at tocculture.com. This episode is brought to you by the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, our newsletter includes two things you don't want to miss out on. First, it's the notes that week's podcast episode. Second, each newsletter contains a short article from myself or Nate on leadership and culture. You can subscribe to the newsletter at tocculture.com or by clicking on the link in the details of each episode. This book is brought to you by my newest book, The Sports Parent Solution. Sports parents have become a significant challenge. For many coaches, they represent their greatest obstacle, causing them sleepless nights and prompting some to consider even leaving the profession altogether. Here's a secret. Your most formidable obstacle can evolve into your greatest ally in developing the team culture you envision and making a lasting impact on an athlete's life. I've assisted hundreds of coaches spanning from youth sports to collegiate levels in forming successful partnerships with parents. The results have been remarkable, and they've affected both the team's performance and the overall experience of its members. In my latest book, The Sports Parent Solution, Proven Strategies for Transforming Obstacles to Allies, I share a proven framework for transforming the parent culture within your program. By implementing the system outlined in the book, you'll witness improvements in your team's culture and performance. So say goodbye to the constant worry about the latest parent issue and instead embrace a future where your team thrives and find invaluable insights to help you build the culture you want. Don't miss out on this opportunity to transform your team. Visit tocculture.com to learn more about the book or just hop on over to amazon.com and check it out there. I want to unpack real quick just the semiotics, and because that language is probably really new for a lot of the coaches listening to this, and it ties a little bit to your culture walls. You know, I wrote about culture walls very briefly in my book, but when I started to dive into what you guys do, I'm like, wow, there's so much more capacity for what you know what you're doing with these culture walls. So what are semiotics? And also one other side question on there is, how are they different than, you know, the cliche little posters where it'd say like adversity and have a guy like breaking through this brick wall or something like you saw on your classroom walls that the schools put up? Or, you know, how are they different than just the school, plastering or painting on the core values on the front of their school or on their crest, what are semiotics and how are they different than these other cliche kind of graphics that we see?
Sure. This is a fun one, and there's so many different avenues that we can go down. So the semiotics are the visuals that we use to articulate the belief system of an organization, and they are attached to meaning as well as, we talked about, in narratives. And I think it's really easy on the face of it to say, this looks like an artifact. It looks like a cartoon. It is cliche. Like, why would I use it? But it's not, right? It's not actually decorative at all. It's not what it's about. It's not what it's for. The semiotics and we sometimes say to the question you asked earlier, when a skilled leader sees a culture wall and sees the semiotics, they get the joke, right? That's the thing. They understand it. And they're physical manifestations of the belief system with the way in which you want people to engage with them. So Clifford Geertz is, he's a famous anthropologist who says, culture is the culmination of symbols that transmit meaning. And that's essentially what these culture walls are. They represent the ideas in an organization. They are also tools that help you have a different conversation than you would normally have. And when I go into organizations and people have, you know, they kind of tilt their head like that and say, I don't get it, like I did the first time I saw it. And in organizations, especially organizations like the military, where everything looks the same, feels the same, smells the same, sounds the same, something like what we create stands out. And it helps people notice. And whether they agree or disagree with the message on the semiotic itself, it allows them to have a conversation. And we often believe that sometimes when people disagree about the message or they don't get it, what it does is it prompts them to then actually say, well, that doesn't make any sense. It's not important. And then someone else can potentially say, okay, well, actually, here's my interpretation of it. And then suddenly you're having a conversation about those beliefs and the things that matter in an organization. And ultimately, because they look a certain way, they get imprinted in your memory. Like the example I shared earlier, thank you for you. It's no different than the Nike swoosh. You see the swoosh, you think Nike. You see the word Nike, you think the swoosh. Apple, you see an apple with a little bite, you know exactly what that means and you know what it stands for. And you know that it is attached to a certain way of showing up, to a certain way of thinking, to people like us doing things like this around here. And that's what, you know, what we're talking about.
Yeah. And there's, you know, Daniel Coyle in his book, Culture Code, talks about, and there's a few other books around just different organizations, whether, you know, it's the Boston Celtics and, you know, what they would put up on their walls. Just there's other sports teams that are doing, you know, this in small ways, but I just absolutely love your graphics and that you always include them in your weekly, or I think it's a couple times a week blog. And I probably am more captivated and looking forward to what the semiotic is going to be than what maybe the article. The articles are always good. They're nice and short too. It's probably the only blog I still like read these days, but yeah, just absolutely love that stuff. So
we are very lucky that we have a great team of writers who is very creative and a wonderful team of artists who make those ideas come to life with the stories. And thank you for saying that. I will definitely pass that on to the team too, because I know they work really hard to make it interesting and short.
Yeah. There's a couple other things I want to dive into just as we kind of head to the last quarter of the car conversation today. And one of those is this, you know, word that or phrase you use, which is operating system for your culture. I call it a COS, culture operating system. I'm just curious from Gaping Void's perspective, what does this mean? And what's so significant in this operating system for your culture?
We talked about thinking and cultures are based on thinking. We talked a little bit earlier about the model, the FMS times AB times S. And that is the fundamental underpinning of what we're talking about when we talk about culture as an operating system and the human OS that we use as a framework. One of the things I want to just step a little bit backward toward before I go forward, and it tracks a little bit, not necessarily to standards, but to rules. So a lot of organizations, they want rules and regulations and policies to get things done. And that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about an operating system. We're not talking about changing rules specifically. It's about changing the thinking and changing the norms of the organization. And that's not me saying that that those things aren't important, but they're not important in context of when we talk about the human operating system and how people show up. And the last thing that we want to do, and certainly we very much go out of our way to talk about, is that we don't ever want to drive a belief system that is focused on compliance and metrics and measurement of the human condition, because it's just counter to the point. And that's really important, and what we want is for people to show up in their work, and if they're thinking about compliance, they're not doing that. So there's another principle with respect to the human operating system that I think is important, and that is this idea about the way that we think about it. And I mentioned belief systems earlier, that a human operating system is a complex collection of beliefs and mindsets and mental models and principles and worldviews that, when combined together, they give us this well-tuned understanding of combining these things with behaviors. They give us the outcome that we seek, if that makes sense. We have a diagram that's a wheel, which is what I'm going through in my head. And all of this thinking, the collection of all of this complex thinking, informs the mental and operational state of an organization, i.e. the operating system. It shapes the organization and the organization's identity, but more importantly, it also shapes how the employees show up. It shapes their identity, who they are, with respect to their work. And it's a like the human body, right? It's a complex dynamic system, and everything has to be working in order for it to be done. It cannot be a standalone effort. Nothing is standalone with respect to culture, and that's why we reference the human operating system. So that's hopefully that's a short version and not me rambling.
Well, what I'm hearing here, and tell me if I'm wrong in this, the human operating system is kind of what I articulate as like a philosophy, like a way of viewing things, right? Of like mission, vision, values, beliefs. And then on the other side, that influences the kind of the operating system for the culture, correct? And I remember reading and just studying like just around Toyota, like you have the Toyota way, is their principles and their human operating system of, you know, what they believe, right? Kaizen and continuous improvement and, you know, people matter, stuff like that. But that influences all the other things around Six Sigma, right? And if you separate one from the other, I mean, it's so funny. I hear about some of my friends, they're in pharmaceuticals and they're in different organizations. They got to go through training on the Toyota production system or Six Sigma or Lean. And they're like, this is a bunch of crap, you know, like, because they don't actually have the human operating system in place, not the culture in place. So what I think this means for coaches is we look for these strategies of how people are building culture. We're looking for, you know, they did this activity or they did this, they put these things up on the wall. Or, you know, we look at all these different types of things, but we haven't gotten the human part right. We're not clear on what we believe. Tell me if I'm off base here.
We're tracking to the same thing. Mm-hmm. If I can take a little bit of pull on a thread a little bit on what you said, is I think in a lot of organizations that it's really easy to stay on the default path of using those well-constructed models and frameworks and processes and CPI and Lean Six Sigma, and you can Lean Six Sigma stuff to death. I promise you, I've seen it done. But that's missing the point in a way. And that may have worked for Toyota, and that's great for Toyota. Every organization, this tracks to what, you know, what I started with, is every organization is different. And yes, they have narratives that rhyme with respect to how things happen, but that's not necessarily going to work. It's not a one size fits all. So I think what's really important for coaches in particular, who, you know, may see some of these models or say, okay, well, I get a belief system. Is that going to work for me? It might not. However, taken together with all of the other different methods and models and frameworks and using the culture system and what we've learned in school or the fundamentals or the basics, like all of that put together is part of that complex system. It has informed our thinking. And I think it's really easy in a world where we have everything pinging and dinging and buzzing, and we're, you know, triple booked and overscheduled and hustle culture and not sleeping, all of this stuff, right? That it's really easy to forget how important it is to stop and think and interact with people so that you can actually go back to the things that really matter in order to drive that culture that you seek.
No, that was great. I want to pick up on one other thing that you shared that really resonated with me, that is really something I focus a lot more on my coaching recently, which is sometimes when we're not happy with our results, we want to just focus on changing our behaviors, right? And you've got to go deeper. And that's one of my biggest things in working with my clients now is like, okay, well, what's driving those behaviors? It's oftentimes what we're feeling, and below that's what we're thinking, our mindset. So it's trying to help address the thinking that is limiting or that is not serving them as a leader, and to say, okay, what are some other thought patterns that we can start to develop? So it just really resonated with that as, and you're doing that on a cultural level, right? So you're addressing kind of those thinking within the organization, and you're really trying to get in there as that's what your guys' work is at Gaping Void, if I'm hearing you right there.
That's right. And it goes back to the coaching, to what you mentioned about the mindsets and digging deeper. That's hard sometimes. And it is circumstantial. It is dependent on not just what's going on with respect to your culture. It's what happened in the meeting before or the game before. It's what happened at practice or in warmups. It's informed by what's going on in the world. And all of that is sometimes uncomfortable. And we often hear when we meet with leaders in small groups that they leave feeling like it was therapy. And it was super cathartic because we really get to the emotions. Because when you get at the emotions, you're hitting on what's really going to actually support the transformation and the change. Emotional connection is really, really, really important. I think there's a phrase which I'm sure I'm going to butcher right now, which is nothing happens until someone feels something.
Well, Erica, I want to ask you one more question before we get out of here. And because you're in the business of culture change, I'm just thinking from my own experiences and starting over at different programs, I'm certain that your clients and you yourself have encountered some resistance at some point along the way, right? With new ideas, new language, new approaches, new visuals, new cultural values, new beliefs. I mean, all of that change, as humans, naturally, we tend to be resistant to that. And so if you were just going to speak to our coaches that are thinking, I love all these things, I've tried some of these things, and I can't get the parents on board. I have kids that just don't get it. My coaching staff, they don't agree with it. You know, like we can experience resistance from so many different angles that sometimes it can become overwhelming and really discouraging. What would you say to leaders that are trying to walk in the right way in a lot of the things that you're talking about? But I'm sure that resistance is a natural part of that process as well.
So resistance is a fundamental truth in every organization where you want to change someone. It's the human condition is such that we don't want to change. And I know you've had lots of folks on here who have on the podcast who've talked about that and mindsets. I guess what I would say to a coach, and there's the cliche thing of it just, you know, just keep at it, just keep doing it. It tracks back to our point about relentless socialization. But moreover, change is often a bell curve. You're going to have your early adopters, the people who are a heck yes, I'm with you all the way, no matter what, thick and thin. Then over time, as the ideas are socialized, these beliefs and mindsets are continuously implanted and imprinted in the organization, you will slowly start to see the change. You will always have the resistors, and there will always be a long tail, and there will always be people who say, of course I'm on board with all of this change and I really like it and I'm on the team. Those people exist. It's just the reality of things. All you really need to get past the resistance, and this is team size dependent, are a few believers that really help help things change. There's a famous TED Talk. I'm forgetting the name of it, but essentially it talks about the lonely leader and the lonely nut, who's the first person who comes out and does the dance in the middle of a field. And it's not necessarily that person going out there on a limb, but it's the people that come behind to help support the change in the transformation. And then when you see that, then suddenly it becomes 2 and 3 and 5 and 10. And then everyone who's in the field is now standing up and dancing hilariously, laughing. And they're all part of it, more or less. And there are still some people standing on the sidelines. And I hope that tracks your question, Nate. But if it's okay, can I take a little bit of a different, use a different kind of analogy to for how I'm thinking? And this is kind of contrary to the resistance, but it's one of the favorite principles that we use for leaders in an organization. Say you're a big football fan. You grew up in the Midwest. I love to use the Big House and the Wolverines in Michigan as an example. They're a great sports team. They're a good example, right? So let's say you're a sports fan. You show up. You're standing at the game. You're in the Big House. And there are over 100,000 people dressed the same, acting in unison, doing the wave. Hail to the victors, right? Hail to Michigan, the leaders and the best, right? Like you know that, right? And they're all doing it. New people, old people, sometimes even the opponent's team, because why not? It's fun. And people like us do things like this around here. So like, we'll give it a go. The point is, and this is respect to like the resistance, sometimes the resistance will just come along. It's, there were no best practices. There's no how-to guide. There's nothing like that, right? It's people like us show things like this. They showed up, they watched, they observed, and they replicated the ideas of those who they thought were successful around them. And they shared a common language, the song, right? They know the symbols, the shirts, the signs, the semiotics. And that's really what we're talking about. And they're all showing up as valued members of a winning team on an inspiring mission going someplace. And I think like that's really the kind of the feeling, the emotion that you want that will overcome this resistance. And again, it doesn't happen in a day, a week, a month. It's over time, over and over and over again. Speaking of relentless socialization, I think I sound like a broken record. So I'm going to stop there and pause.
Well, I certainly recognize with that in my own experience, just at Mount Vernon, where I'm at now, starting over a couple of years ago, you know, trying to, JP talks about this all the time, identify the influencers who are the ones that are most likely to be followed, whether they're the ones you choose or not, and then trying to gain their buy-in or their belief, you know, to align with what we're trying to build. And one of the phrases that we use with our seniors now every year as the program is being passed on, you know, into their care is, as an influencer, because people look up to you, whatever you do, you permit others to do. You know, and we ask them to start thinking about, you know, we've used this phrase, you know, people like us do things like this, getting our seniors to think about who have we become and who do we not want to be this year. It all comes back to what you do, you're permitting others to do. And that phrase, I think, echoes a lot of what you're saying there, and that the influencers are really key to getting other people then to follow along.
Influence is so important, and you're right. It doesn't take much, and I think the point about that too is that people are always watching what you do. So when we talk about deliberate culture design and deliberate use of language, that is important. It is deliberately designed and structured. Some of it is organic and wonderful, but two, you want to make sure that you are celebrating the norms and the behaviors and the mindsets and the ideas that are positively impactful. And I would say we use the phrase demonize, which is a little bit strong, but demonize the norms that you don't want. And I think, JP, you know, this tracks to something in the culture system as well, right? You don't you want to make sure that you don't celebrate those and you call them out also. And we don't have enough time, but you know, maybe at another point we could go through some of the replication principles of people and how they behave that way. So
yeah, I want to get shot on
that. By the way. Oh, sorry, JP. Nate, that's really cool that you all use that. I think it's so impactful, especially at that point in a person's life, that where they are in terms of their growth, that kind of thinking is going to shape the future of how they are and how they show up, no matter what team they are on. It's really cool.
So I've got this last question I just have to ask. And you mentioned earlier that Gaping Void is growing as an organization significantly, and you're constantly hiring more and more people. On your website, it says, the best place to work, period. Right? And I hear that. I'm like, man, that sounds awesome. I can't wait till Erica starts dropping 5 cents in my PayPal account there, on a weekly basis. But, the best place to work, period. You obviously know about culture, but then, replicating a great culture, building your own great culture within your own organization presents its own challenges. So as you're growing, what are you all learning about culture that you maybe didn't know before?
The fun thing that I am learning continuously is that we really do practice what we coach and we deliver in an organization. And we don't always get it right, but we are constantly revisiting what we believe, how we show up. And with every new person that comes into the organization, we are always looking to increase our average as an organization, whether that's in capability of writing or executing our consulting practice or in the creative work and endeavors that we do. And we are very focused on how we bring people into the organization. And I would say that is fundamental to the experience of how people show up and how they want to continue to show up. And we spend a lot of time as an organization, and this is something that we are unapologetic about and will not change, is that we have a application process that is unlike any other, where we actually use the tools that we implement in organizations when we're trying to discover the truth. We're trying to understand what people think, what they believe, what gets them excited, what they show up. And it's really fun and interesting because we have a lot of people. Actually, we got some applications today, and I'll say someone said, "I'm so sorry I didn't get to get selected. That was the most fun application process I have ever had, I have to say." It's a signal, right? That like we do fun things. We do very hard things and we work very hard, but that is an intentional design element of how we bring it. Our onboarding is the same. We spend a ton of time onboarding individuals, one-on-ones, group conversations, watching old recordings. Again, it tracks back to the idea that if you don't know where you came from, you don't know where you're going. And we could be embarrassed about that. Absolutely. However, we have gotten to the point that we are because of who we were. Jason says this phrase, I'm not sure where it comes from exactly, but if you aren't embarrassed by who you were a year ago, you're not growing enough. And that's a principle that we really align toward as we're growing. And new people come in with new ideas. And as we look at the varying generations that we have, the thinking that comes into play, and it makes us better. We have folks who have been in their careers for 30 plus years. We have folks who this is their first job out of college. And one of the other things that this is difficult to do in hierarchical organizations, and we tried to do this, and if I'm rambling again, please cut me off, is that idea meritocracy is a thing. And we don't have to agree with the idea. However, if we're not cultivating, and we do this, cultivate an environment where people feel like they can share the ideas, even if we don't agree, then the idea never gets heard. And we don't know what we don't know. And so that is something that I think is really important regardless, like for a coach, for a team. A kid on a sports team could be watching TikTok or YouTube and see something that worked in a, some crazy wild hockey play that a basketball coach is paying zero attention to. And they're like, hey, maybe if we try this, and it's like, it's a weird offense or a weird defense. And like, hey, it could be a wacky idea, but maybe there's something in there that's going to be just a little bit different to help you gain that competitive advantage in a moment where you wouldn't have otherwise thought about it. you never know. And I think that's the kind of thing as you grow as an organization, you have to be really open to, because it's really easy to say, oh, well, that didn't work in 2013 when we did it. And so therefore, I'm like, first of all, stuff changes at the speed of light these days. So like, what didn't work yesterday actually might work today in the world that we live in. And so that kind of mindset too is really important to consider, you know, as well. And as humans change in sports teams too, like shapes and sizes and the way that we show up, like that changes, that's physics, right? You know, like there's all of these different things that you get to think about within the system. And that's so fundamental to all of the things that we talked about earlier with respect. Like they're all inputs into this really fun, complex, dynamic system.
I absolutely love so much of what you shared there. The one that I'll definitely pull on and just pull out is just this idea of like your application process. Something I talk to a lot with my college coaches that I work with is that, like, ideally, if someone you're recruiting, whether they come to your team or not, you want them to have some sort of transformation as of having been recruited by you, right? It shouldn't just be selling them on your program. It's like you're offering stuff, you're sharing stuff, you're trying to pour into them, get to know them, you're asking them questions that are really challenging. And I had a college coach, Division I level, and she started doing this recently, and she started asking parents and athletes questions and recruitments that are like, they're like, oh, I never even thought about that, you know, and that's a really good question. And but it's getting people to think about things that no other, you know, that are challenging questions, that are deep questions, thought provoking. They don't always have answers to it, but they've been transformational, you know, just been recruited by her in that program. And so I absolutely love the fact that you guys do that unapologetically. I think that's just phenomenal. Yeah. As we wrap up here, give us just our listeners just a quick, you know, where they can go to find your organization, learn more about what you all are doing.
Oh, absolutely. The plug. Right. So you can go to, you're asking someone who doesn't have social media. And so it's just like, it's not intuitive. So you can go to www.gapingvoid.com. That's GAPINGVOID, one word. .com. And you can also join our culture community on LinkedIn. If you join or connect with me, I can certainly share that information also. And then what I would say, and you mentioned this earlier, JP, is on our website, you can sign up for our blog. It is really interesting, thought-provoking pieces to not only consider, but to share sometimes with your teams. And that's a great way to stay in touch, to keep a finger on the pulse of what's going on in the culture world.
Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
JP, Nate, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the conversation.
All right, that's it for our conversation with Erica. Be sure to check out their blog. Go on over to gapingvoid.com. Like I said, it's the one blog that I'm consistently always reading. The semiotics, the art with the blog is always very provocative, and I'm always sharing it with other coaches. So some great content, and the work they do, so high level. So be sure to check out gapingvoid.com. Now, if you're enjoying this podcast, I would ask you to be sure to subscribe. If you find value in it, leave us a review and also share an episode. Share these episodes with the coaches in your community. I think podcasts are a great way to spark conversations and dialogue and friendships where people can support each other, mentor each other, and encourage each other's growth.